and its advertisers or affiliates.
Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And this evening our special guest is Michael Shaw, a freedom advocate here in the Monterey Bay area. And certainly Michael is heading a group that is trying to bring out the truth about sustainable development and about the organized, orchestrated, intentional effort to do away with private property rights and increase government control over every aspect of our individual lives. So with that as the background, good evening, Michael. How are you tonight?
And I'm just fine, and you know, it's been a beautiful day here in Santa Cruz County, and the fog's rolled in tonight, and it's kind of like the end of a good hard work of a week of work. Things are happening now at increasing rate, and I think that's going to cause people to be open to understanding what's really got our nation in its, you know, stranglehold, and once people begin to understand the dynamic.
Well, I think, of course, here in Santa Cruz area, where you and I live, has always been an area of trial. This is where they've tried these incredible techniques, the Sustainable Development Agenda 21. All of these programs for controlling the masses have really been tried out here. And, of course, it really all gets around to the fact that there's an elite who want to control the lives of the people, and so they use the idealism of environmentalists and of liberals and others to centralize power, first of all with local government, but then with the national government, all along as we move away from freedom towards fascism. So you pick up the story.
Well, I think that was a good analysis and assessment. I would make one modification. You know, certainly the liberal element of the political dynamic today works hard to sell the public on an environmentalism that is designed to strip or abolish private property and just destroy unalienable rights. But it's what makes the phenomenon work is the artificial dialectic that's been created, which means that both the left and the right are doing this. You know, the right brings in the public-private partnership and the big globalist monetary systems and multinational corporate interests, that when you combine it with the leftist movements in the local communities, it's that combination that is sustainable development, and it's the greatest threat, clearly, that America has ever faced.
You're absolutely right. Of course, they use both the right and the left, the Republicans, the Democrats, the conservative and the liberals, and these are just terms that they use, but the truth of the matter is the leadership of both sides are controlled by exactly the same people, and there is no effective opposition to them.
And let me add a little to that discussion. You know, that operates this way. The Democrats have their Democrat Leadership Council, of which Clinton was their nominal head. The Democrat Leadership Council comes out of Great Britain's Fabian socialist mentality, a system that had been headed up by Tony Blair, and the Labour Party was still being in control, is still implementing these globalist systems that reflect that ideology. But the Republicans have their international group also. Very few people know about it. Republicans are astounded when they hear about it, but they have what's called the International Democrat Union, or IDU.org. You can go to the website an hour later and check this out. But the IDU.org...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Go right ahead, Michael. The IDEU.org.
Yes, IDE, International Democrat Union, .org, is a group of 80 political parties from around the world. And it's led by the Conservative Party of Great Britain and the GOP. The governor of Mississippi, Haley Barbour, former head of the Republican Party itself, is the official representative to the IDU. Now, the IDU meets at the same time and in the same town the GOP meets every 4 years for their conventions. And the leaders run shuffle themselves back and forth between the IDU and the Republican Party convention. The reality is it doesn't matter which party is in control. We're heading down this path of globalism implemented through a policy program called sustainable development. And it's just something that the people have got to increasingly come to understand, because when you do, the pattern that's harming America today becomes really quite evident. We've got the big job of fighting the global to local movement, which is what sustainable development is, back. And the only way I think we can fight back is to organize locally, become vocal, and that message ends up having a national impact. And that's beginning to happen in communities across the country.
It's sort of like that slogan that the left had here a few years ago, think globally but act locally.
That's right. We need to act locally and become vocal.
Okay.
Act local, become vocal. And like I say, that is happening. I was in central Wisconsin last week, and the people there are getting it, and they're organizing. And this is a traditional progressive state, but it doesn't matter if you're an arch-conservative or a progressive. Once you understand what sustainable development is about, fair-minded and reasonable people, Americans in spirit or in thought, know that this is not the program we want. And that's when we begin to rally ourselves, inform our friends and neighbors, create this grassroots approach to spread freedom back to America, create its defense, and to wipe out these notions called sustainable development.
And of course, what they really want to do is get us fighting among one another all the time, fighting among ourselves, so we don't see the overall plan and how this is being manipulated. And as long as we're fighting among ourselves, there is no effective opposition to the globalist plan to create a one-world government under a ruling elite. And we'll be back here in just a moment with Michael Shaw. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Michael was saying that this IDU organization, a Republican organization, usually meets at the same time the Republican convention is held, and it has exactly the same goal as a comparable Democratic organization. So there, these environmental organizations in both the Republican and the Democrat Party go through exactly the same direction, but they've got to give the people out there, the suckers as it were, the impression that they're fighting back and forth between one another, whereas the truth of the matter is nothing could be further from the truth, at least as far as the leadership is concerned.
Well, I think that's true, and the point I didn't make about the IDU, which is essential, is that the IDU calls for the global implementation of the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. Now, this document stands in stark contrast in every principled way to the Declaration of Independence. If we adopt the provisions of the UN Declaration of Human Rights, individual liberty is something of a bygone era. And so the Republican Party, just like the Democrat Party, has sold America out to the globalist interests of multinational corporations and to the advocates of what's called social justice, which is really just implementing a system of communist justice in replacement of America's traditional notion of equal justice, which means that we apply justice equally to each individual. Social justice means that you apply justice in groups, depending upon what the elite designed for certain group manipulation. It is communism. We need to wake up to that. It's the concept of justice that is being taught today in our law schools. This concept of sustainable development and all of its tentacles has spread very deeply and widely throughout the United States. It is not a notion, though, that when understood, the average American, the ordinary human being, would support.
And I think that, of course, one of the most confusing things is when we talk about communism, we think this has something to do, like, well, of course, redistribution of the wealth or you know, equality or Karl Marx. But that is certainly just for the common people. That's the cover. Communism is an elitist concept. We're a small group of elitists backed by a secret police and military and police force rule the masses. Exactly the same direction that we are headed right here in the United States, where we have a ruling elite backed by a powerful secret police and certainly a police force and military that is there to control the masses. And the average person doesn't understand that the leaders of communism and the leaders of our system both have the same goal, because the leaders of our system do not represent America at all. America was a nation where men were to be free. These people don't believe in freedom. They believe in control through sustainable development and globalism.
Well, I think that is about as good a summary as could be printed.
Well, thank you. You can go ahead, though, because Michael's got some great information on sustainable development that every one of our listeners needs to get.
Well, and for the listeners who are new to this subject, our website, freedomadvocates.org, will fill you full of the information you need, and the other sites around the nation that are focused similarly and are bringing out all kinds of the evidence and the plan behind sustainable development. And we need to understand that, because if we don't, it will swallow us up. It divides us, and it's going to conquer us by confusing us and getting us on the wrong path. So let me give a bit of information about a very typical symbol used by sustainable developers and used at the local level, state levels, and international levels. And if you look around, you'll find it. And once you've found it, you've at least identified your enemy. And that doesn't mean that everybody involved in sustainable development programs is a knowing participant. After all, Lenin in early Soviet Union days said, most of our participants do not know our philosophy. They are simply useful idiots. And that's what particularly the environmental movement has been for the sustainable developers, which is really a narrow elite of largely corporate or kingly type interests are responsible for. So that it's the average environmentalist working to take the use of their neighbor's property is the classic useless idiot, useful idiot in the communist or sustainable development arena.
But what is sustainable development, just for our listeners out there who are not really acquainted with that term?
Well, sustainable development is a process by which America is being reorganized around the central principle of state collectivism, using the environment as bait. And it does this while indoctrinating and preparing the children to live in a state-run collective. Now, the first step for sustainable development action plans is their land use program. And that breaks into two components. One's called the Wildlands Project, and the other is Smart Growth. Wherever you live in the United States, where you are now is subject to one of these two plans. Now, the Wildlands Project is preposterous. One first hearing this thinks, well, that's a silly idea, and there's no way it can happen in the United States. But then when you begin to think and look around and see the policies that have been coming out of Washington, D.C. for the last 15 years, now it's coming out of every state government, and has been adopted by most county governments, you begin to think, oh my, this is real, and it's advancing very quickly. The other program is called Smart Growth. That's taking all the people and stacking them and packing them into very narrow human settlement zones. Now, these zones are to begin to eliminate the automobile while putting people on mass transit systems, generally trains and the like. But the core of sustainable development, after it's implemented its land use plan and after it's taken over our educational system, which has made great progress on, is the control of the population. That doesn't mean just control what you do. It means controlling our numbers. So that's the final phase of this final answer to how it is that centralized globalists can gain control over all human action and all human beings. So it's something we need to begin to understand if we're Americans who are true and genuine to our heritage, who want to respect what it is that our ancestors delivered us and be able to deliver the same freedoms to our children. We better understand sustainable development, and we better get busy soon.
Well, what part does global warming play in this sustainable development program?
Well, global warming is a significant front page kind of element of sustainable development. The use of the global warming hysteria is to provide the excuse necessary, in the view of some, to abolish private property. And Santa Cruz, just the city yesterday, appointed a global warming czar to achieve just these things. The statement was hilarious. It was, by appointing a global warming czar, we'll keep our, meaning Santa Cruz, oceans from rising, and we'll keep our downtown from flooding. So this czar is going to have czar-like authority over the determination of all uses of private property in order to protect against this crazy idea of global warming. Now, I call it crazy idea. I'm not saying that warming is not happening, and I'm not a scientist. But if you look at the literature, you begin to see how it is that global warming is being used to advance this attack on private property. There is a video called The Global Warming Swindle. And this is made up of former IPCC scientists and other scientists from Europe and from America. And the interesting part for me was a comparison of the charts that showed warming trends and CO2 increases over a very long period of time. Now, Al Gore had used these charts in his video, An Inconvenient Truth. He had the two lines running up on top of each other, but not intersecting each other. Well, the reality upon a closer study of CO2 levels and warming trends shows that warming leads and CO2 follows. In other words, CO2 is not the cause of warming. It is an effect of warming.
Now, I think it's important that people understand the greatest source of CO2 in the entire Earth is the oceans. And when you begin to heat things, as we're in a warming cycle, the CO2 then begins to come out of solution in the ocean, and actually then the CO2 in the atmosphere increases. Now, I don't question that burning fossil fuels has put CO2 into the environment, but how much of the increase in the CO2 we've seen over the last 50 years has really come from, from human activity, and how much has it come from the oceans? This is the big question, and nobody has ever addressed that. There's now 1 in 1,000 people who realize that the major source of CO2 in the atmosphere is the CO2 coming from the oceans, which is why when you heat, the CO2 level follows the heating level. Have you ever heard that discussed, though?
No, you don't hear that very often. I think even more critical is the fact that that warming happens and then CO2 rises. Right. It's not the other way around.
Absolutely. All right, we'll be back in just a moment with Michael Shaw talking about this whole concept of sustainable development designed to take away your freedom. Well, Michael, go right ahead.
Well, let's talk about the sustainable development symbol. It's three circles that overlie each other. And within each...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Concept and it's imposed by the state. And then, of course, the second of the three E's is what?
It's economy.
Economy, go ahead.
Yeah, and the economy is about both the substitution of public-private partnership, we used to call that fascism, for free enterprise. So with that, you have the abolition of private property. And, you know, it's about creating the way they create these public-private partners. The view is that businesses want the protection afforded by government, and government wants the power of business. So they create the partnerships and build, for instance, when application of that is that when it comes to housing, the public-private partners build the housing to these smart growth standards, which is to concentrate all people and stack them in pack of living units, putting them on the train and taking their children for child care during the day.
Now, basically, these are what is known as sustainable communities, then.
Yes. They're called smart growth communities within sustainable development formulations.
And, of course, this is where, you have your lower floor where you can do your shopping, the floor above that where you work, and then the floors above that where you live in a very, very small, confined space where you can be easily monitored and easily controlled. These are sustainable communities. And then, of course, you're not going to have to use your car because everything's there. They want to get you out of your car. They want to restrict your use of electricity. They want to control everything you do.
Well, that's right. And they've got a lot of sweet and warm and fuzzy sounding terms to describe all of these things, like walkable communities. And, you know, at our website, we have a whole list of the kinds of buzzwords that they use so that you can identify how it is that these programs are coming into your community, because I don't care where you live in America, it is happening in your community. It is a federal directive. It all began under George Bush the First when he signed the Rio Accord to the UN Conference on Sustainable Development in 1992. And then quickly thereafter, Bill Clinton set up the President's Council for Sustainable Development, and no one has moved the ball forward further and faster than has George Bush. And it's to include the kinds of discussion you had the night before, regarding vitamin supplements. And how they're being stripped away from the free market and put under the control of the FDA. And all of that are little pieces of the sustainable puzzle. Remember, sustainable development wants a world population of either between 5 and 7 billion people, provided that they are peasants, living peasant lifestyles. But a global population of no more than 1 billion people, that's an 85% reduction, if we're to live by modern North American economic standards. So the essence of sustainable development, in their own words, can only be deduced as to the goal to eliminate the middle class.
And I think that's so hard for anybody to imagine that here in America there would be people who'd want to eliminate our middle class, and yet, you know, certainly if you look and see what's happening, wages are falling, jobs are leaving the country, people who have to get a new job will get maybe a 50% of what they were making before. Certainly in the automotive industry recently, Delphi, major parts producer for cars, accepted a 50% reduction in salary. They're talking about a 50% reduction, 40 to 50% reduction in salary for employees of GE and Ford, those who are lucky enough to still have a job, and many of them will take it. And then, of course, so much is being done today to lower our living standards, to destroy the value of our currency. And people see these things happening, but they can't imagine there's a master plan behind it. But there really is, isn't there, Michael?
Well, that's the good news. The good news is that the evidence and the documentation is so overwhelming that no one has to rely on conspiracy theory anymore. It's just the fact that the conspirators have put their plan into effect. They've been working a long time, but today you can see it white out and in the open. It's called sustainable development, and you can start with UN websites to begin to understand in their flowery language that it exists, and you can smell through this and see what it means. Then go to websites like ours, freedomadvocates.org, and you get the details on how these dots connect.
All right, fine. That's freedomadvocates.org, and we'll be back in just a moment to continue exploring this whole incredible story of sustainable development, which is designed to change our way of life forever. Well, go right ahead, Michael.
Well, next week, Dr. Stan, I'm going to be in Texas. I'm going to give a talk in Austin, right at a bookstore adjacent to the University of Texas. And then the Freedom 21 annual conference is to be held in Dallas later this week. And I'll be speaking there as well. But a common theme from many speakers coming to Texas will be to discuss this Trans-Texas Corridor, which is a partnership between, at this point, the state of Texas and the Spanish corporation called Cintra. And what the Trans-Texas Corridor is all about is that it's about taking a highway that's to begin on the Pacific coast in central Mexico and extend it into Texas, through Texas, across the United States, and into about six cities in Canada. Now, the purpose of the Trans-Texas Corridor is to allow the easy entry of foreign goods, I'm going to speculate primarily Chinese goods, into the United States without our current system of border control or trade policy care and limitation. It will allow these goods in. They will dock in Kansas City and from there spread out all over the country. Now, it is an economic Trojan horse. It potentially could become a military Trojan horse for all of the United States. Now, this road will be a toll road, and the tolls will be going to the multinational corporation based in Spain called Cintra. Now, the people in Texas suddenly, earlier this year, caught wind of a plan that was well advanced and moving right along. And the pressure is so great that the people in Texas caused their legislature to vote overwhelmingly to delay all action on this for at least 2 years. Now, I'm not sure. My understanding from yesterday in an interview I did in Texas is that the Texas governor vetoed that legislation. He is a globalist working very hard to get this Trojan horse launched in America. It's the kind of action that the globalists bring in order to implement sustainable development. It's really a program very similar to what happened in the European Union prior to the time that the Union was formed but the trade policies were established. The goal of this Trans-Texas Corridor, which will spread out all across North America, is to create a North American Union. Because once a nation loses control of its trade policy...
Hold that, Paul. We'll be right there in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Michael Shawn. We'll get back to the subject he was talking about in just a moment. But before we go on, Michael, I want you to tell our listeners out across America how they can get in touch with Freedom Advocates, how they can get your excellent material.
Well, our website is freedomadvocates.org, easy enough, and we've got a store there and tremendous articles and information that documents this and more about what I'm talking tonight. We also have a store filled with tools that you can use to help inform your neighborhood or inform your community, from pamphlets to videos to articles and to radio shows. There's several hundred hours of we were on your network where we produced hundreds of hours of interviews with people across the country who understand various elements of the sustainable development drive. You can listen to those, you can download those, you can purchase those, you can put them on your own radio stations, you can circulate them in your community. But the pamphlets have been our big what we've utilized the most in informing the largest number of communities These are simple to read pamphlets that really get down to the bottom line on what sustainable development is and how to recognize it in your community. So recommend to everybody that they look at our website, they begin to gather information, and from there, boy, the sky is open. There's all kinds of places to go to further that information.
And they've got a great pamphlet there on sustainable development where this is all described, don't you?
Yes. I mean, I think for, you know, pamphlet size material filled with, you know, charts and maps, to get it in 20 pages or so, it's a, you know, 15-minute read, and you'll have yourself a good general framework. You can go past that and become as deeply and keenly aware as, you know, as your capacity allows. But once you get that general thrust, you'll be way ahead of the bad guy, and all you need to do then is get more people understanding it, and America's freedom can survive. But if we don't do this, America's freedom is gone.
Well, now, of course, that's freedomadvocates.org, freedomadvocates.org. What about the telephone number? What's the telephone number?
831-684-2232. That's 831-684-2232.
And if you really want to get the information on sustainable development, there's no better source of information than you're going to be getting from freedomadvocates.org. Well, Michael was talking before we so rudely interrupted him about the Trans-Texas Highway, or the NASCOM Highway. This massive highway, it's going to be 4 football fields wide, being, of course, put in the United States using eminent domain and funding from a Spanish corporation so that the tolls will go out of this country. And this is going to be running right across our border with no interruption. The border will be open all the way up into Kansas City. And, of course, the people of Texas were incensed by this, and they brought pressure to bear on their legislators, and certainly in the House there. I know, I think the vote was, 150-3 or something like that, and it's very, very similar in the Senate. The elected legislators didn't want this. They've got enough votes to override the governor's veto. But of course, when they heard about it in Washington, D.C., you see, we no longer have a representative government. We have a fascist government in Washington, D.C. that dictates policy because their loyalty is not to America, but to the globalist dream of the destruction of sovereignty, the North American Union, then joining the North American Union with the European Union and all of the other unions and creating the world government. That is the primary drive behind everything going on today. And so the federal government said to the Texas government, the Texas state government, the sovereign government of the state of Texas, we're going to punish you like a little boy. We're going to cut off all federal funds for you if you don't go along with our program, which is to build this highway. So what was the response of the people there in Texas? Are they going to take it laying down, or are they going to just say, you know, this is our state, it's not yours, Mr. Bush?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. But perhaps I'll have an opinion after the meeting in Texas next week. While attendees of the Freedom 21 conference come from all over the country, there certainly is destined to be a heavy block from Texas. The Freedom 21 outreach has focused on the issue of the Trans-Texas Corridor for a good long while, and the reaction to that dynamic for Texans themselves, I think, is in part attributable to the work that a variety of people at Freedom 21 have undertaken. So, hopefully the Texans will rise up, just as the Californians need to begin to wake up to how this state is being massively subjected to sustainability rules. And of course, Santa Cruz itself is one of the original plot plans for sustainable development experimentation. And we're one of the original communities that is moved along quite far. In its implementation, And we can trace that to nearly every politician who is holding office today. Now, some of them don't know sustainable development, but boy, they sure go along because they understand that the political machinery in this county rewards them for going along, even if they don't know what it is they're going along with.
Yeah, if you're saying the local newspaper, which is simply an extension of the establishment that is running this whole thing, backs the politicians and, of course, attacks and demeans and demonizes anybody who speaks out against these policies.
Well, that's right. I mean, it was owned by Dow Jones. It's now owned by another corporate conglomerate that seems to have its affections with the globalist world. The same newspaper owns the Monterey, the same chain owns the Monterey Herald and the Santa Fe Mercury as control of the Santa Cruz Sentinel. So we've got the whole region, if you want to call it that. Congressman Farr takes those three counties, Santa Clara and at least southern Santa Clara and Santa Cruz and Monterey and San Bernardino counties as a region. Of course, region, politically speaking, regionalism is communism. It means you don't have political boundaries, which means you don't have representative government. It means that you have a Soviet style of government. That's what regions mean. That's why regionalism is communism.
And if there's one time we controlled our local communities through our city government, and then our county government, and then our state government. And they want to get away from that, from duly elected representatives. They want non-elected representatives of regions really controlling our lives. They've got this thing all figured out. They know exactly what they're doing. And what they're doing is intentionally confusing the people, talking about their concern about the environment, about this little salamander that's endangered, and of course about the butterfly that's endangered, and about how they love the forest. And how are they going to preserve the forest? They're going to let them burn. And one reason we're having so many fires across America that are so difficult to control is they've blocked efforts to clean the forest, to get rid of the brush, to have adequate roads in there so they get the fire crews in. And if the truth of the matter be known, the environmentalists, at least at the very top, are not concerned about the environment or the birds or the animals. It's all about control. But they're able to mobilize so many good people under all these false flags of, oh, concern about the salamander.
Well, I think that's right, Stan. And what the individual has to do is find one basis or another by which they can begin to see the linkage of the dots that sustainable developers draw. And when you do that, you can just see the big blanket coming over us, shrouding us, taking away all of our freedoms and leaving us in this vacuum of a world where human beings become biological resources. I came to understand this as a result of a 20-year effort that my wife and I had taken to take a parcel of property along the coast and turn it from pasture grass of European origin and walls of poison oak up into the oak forest and convert that into a dynamic and diverse native plant environment. And we've done that. We've retrieved over 250 species of native plants from a dormant seed bank. And now, this has taken 20 years and a whole lot of money and manpower. But the consequence of having done that really makes me an enemy of the state here locally. And, as a consequence, I'm unable to build even my own house on land that's zoned for 30 houses. But I'm not a public-private partner, and I embarrass them on this environmental stuff because my point is that private property, unencumbered by unreasonable government regulations, can achieve what it is that people want. And if people want an improved ecological diversity, that's what they'll get. Unless, of course, we've established a system of laws and rules that penalize people for outdoing government. Now, there are other ways you can connect these dots, and I think one that has emerged because the tools are there now is to understand the nature of funny money in America. I call it funny money because There's nothing behind it. You print a dollar, you print a $100 bill, or cost you a nickel to print it, and all of a sudden, you've created $100. Well, the creation of that $100 comes into effect by virtue of taking the money that you, I'm going to talk about the globalists for a minute, that the globalists can simply create out of thin air and pass off as debt to somebody else. So when someone subscribes to new dollars, say businesses or real estate developers, when they subscribe to the banking system to a new dollar, somebody makes a dollar out of thin air, somebody else assumes the debt for a dollar, and the economy gets built on this funny money system. Well, fiat money, that's the nature of it. Fiat money's never lasted in all of history. People have tried to make money out of thin air before, and in many different ways, but it never lasts. We need to ask ourselves, is the American dollar ready to implode? Now, if you want to understand this more, Aaron Russo's video, America, Freedom to Fascism, is what you need to see. You can get it at our store, you can get it other places on the web. Aaron Russo is a major Hollywood producer. The movie is entertaining and fast-moving. It's a documentary. It's about as good a movie, certainly as thought-provoking a movie, as you'll ever want to see. So that's one way you can come to an understanding of the linkage of the dots behind sustainable development.
And of course, with you can create money out of nothing. Why, of course, then you can buy up newspapers, and then you can control what people think. You can buy up politicians, and of course, then you can direct the course of law. You can buy up judges, and they'll pass the laws that you want, and certainly they'll serve the people who are providing them with money. If you can create money out of nothing, it's the greatest scam of all time. But the day of reckoning does eventually come.
Well, it does, and one has to ask, as you look at the monetary system today, is the American dollar on the verge of an implosion? And that's a serious question, and one that nobody wants to ask or think about. But the design is that when the timing is right for the globalists to implode our dollar in order to subjugate our people, they have all the power necessary to do that. They're in control of our government, they're in control of our monetary system, and that's why the red flag of warning needs to rise up in the minds of every individual American.
I certainly concur. In fact, there are so many red flags out there, and some of the legislation that's been passed, the Military Commission Act, which of course does away with the right of habeas corpus and judicial review for anybody who's accused of being a terrorist. You only have to be accused, you don't have to be one, and suddenly you can be thrown in prison. They say you can't do it if you're an American citizen, but they did it with Padilla. If they can do it with him, why can't they do it with anybody out there? And then, of course, the ability to use the U.S. military against the American people. Why would they suddenly do away with the Posse Comitatus Act at this time? Why are they giving Halliburton $385 million a year to stand by to and be prepared to build massive numbers of concentration camps? Why? And if you doubt that, go up on the Internet and Google in Halliburton, $385 million, concentration camps. Why are we refurbishing the Japanese concentration camps? Why, on the 9th of May, did the President pass two presidential directives without fanfare or permission of Congress that allows him to declare a dictatorship at any time he feels there's a need for it, without congressional approval, or with no time limit on how that long the military certainly occupation of our country could last? People say these things couldn't happen in America. What does President Bush know that the rest of us don't know? Is there a crisis coming of some sort in the very near future?
Well, it's the making of a dictatorship is what our legislation has. It's a spot our legislation has put us in. And we need to hold those who are responsible for that legislation, it's been at least the last three presidents, responsible for having done that. Of course, this isn't a problem that dates from 1989. It goes back easily to the early part of the 20th century and the establishment of the Federal Reserve and the other actions taken by Woodrow Wilson. And certainly the experience with Roosevelt advanced significantly the globalist plans. And when we're talking about money, you can't forget that it was Republican Richard Nixon who finally and completely took us off any kind of gold-based money. Of course, that process really began with Woodrow Wilson. So if you understand funny money, you begin to see we're in trouble. But there are other ways. You know, if one looks at the issue of how private property is being abolished, you know, the sustainable developers are changing our system of economics from free enterprise to public-private partnership. George Washington said it succinctly, private property and freedom are inseparable. Well, private property doesn't exist under a fascist system of public-private partnership.
Yeah, of course, there was John Locke who talked about the principles of freedom, life, liberty, and property. And, of course, they were inseparable, life, liberty, and property. And you'll never see the words life and liberty expressed in the Constitution without having them accompanied by the word property. And yet, Triz try to build on your property without permission of the state. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program with Michael Shaw. Well, Michael, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I think the right summary here is that we are being attacked in a way America has never been attacked. The attack is onshore. The attack is philosophical. It's in our classrooms. It's in our universities. It's in our city halls. It's in our governor's mansion. It's certainly in our executive department. It's in our federal legislature. It's through our courts. We're in trouble. And the only way we're going to come out of that trouble is to understand the philosophy and the organizational pattern, not the conspiratorial notions, but the real-life programs that follow a pattern, that follow a blueprint. And that blueprint is called Agenda 21. It is sustainable development. It's a program for the 21st century to put us under global governance devoid of any inalienable rights, all subject to the rules, regulations that come out of a globalized government in the form of United Nations.
And I think most Americans find that difficult to believe. And yet, of course, how could you deny that we're moving in that direction today? I mean, the signs are so obviously there for anybody who will look. And that's why I suggest you go to freedomadvocates.org or, once again, that telephone number people can call you at, Michael, to get your material.
831-684-2232. And stand tomorrow on KSCO.com for listeners around the country. I'll be interviewing Ron Paul. I think Ron Paul is the only presidential candidate who understands this globalized dynamic and is willing to talk about it. Anyway, we'll find out more tomorrow. If you tune in on the web to KSCO.com, we'll have Ron Paul live for about 20 minutes, and then the next 40 minutes is campaign coordinator, Mr. Kent Snyder, who I've interviewed on Radio Liberty twice before. And you'll find that interview, which that part of it's pre-recorded, you'll find that interview just power-packed and fascinating. So I encourage your listeners to go to the web tomorrow. There.
All right, find it again. The address to go to?
It's KSCO.com at 12 noon California time.
That's KSCO.com. www.ksco.com, and you can actually you can listen to the interview with Ron Paul, and then of course a more lengthy interview with Kent Snyder, who's the right hand man of Ron Paul, does an excellent job of expressing these things, and this philosophy of freedom that seems to have been forgotten. Michael, thanks very much. Good luck with the program tomorrow.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Michael Shaw of freedomadvocates.org. And, of course, Michael does support Radio Liberty, and we support Michael. And he will be speaking at our conference on the 28th of October of this year. It's going to be a Sunday conference again. I hope you can make it. We'll have Dr. Garth Nicholson there. We'll have Ron Brown. We'll have Michael Shaw. It's going to be a great time. And so set that date aside, and we've had great turnouts in the past. I think we had probably, well over 125 at our last conference. Hope to have a lot more this year, and you'll find it fascinating. Well, if you'd like to get some of our material on sustainable development, we have a syllabus that is really rather unique because it takes you into the Georgia Guidestones. It explains to you the population control agenda, which is such an important part of a sustainable development because they feel that there are too many people who are using up their natural resources. And, of course, they are the ruling elite of this country, tied into the Council on Foreign Relations, and other people of great wealth and great power who want to use this whole concept of sustainable development to create a world government under their control. But, of course, in large part, they would like to either impoverish the people, and they openly say this in their publications, or simply eliminate a large number of them, like well over four-fifths or five-sixths of them. Well, if you'd like, of course, to get the material and the documentation, the Sustainable Development Syllabus, it has a summary of the Global Biodiversity Assessment, which is the master plan. It was published by Cambridge University Press after the Rio Summit meeting in 1992. The Global Biodiversity Assessment, you can order through your library, or you can get, of course, the summary of it in our Sustainable Development Syllabus. There also you'll get the World Bank Water Policy. You'll get the programs that they have for control of the Earth Charter, which is the new Mein Kampf, where, of course, they talk about equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. Equitable distribution of wealth between nations means, of course, the destruction of the economy of the United States and the distribution of the wealth of the United States. The Earth Charter is the Mein Kampf for what's going on today. It is the Ten Commandments, according to the men who wrote it, the new Ten Commandments for the world, because they are going to replace the old God with their God. Who wrote it? Why, of course, Mikhail Gorbachev. Marie Strong is a multi-billionaire affiliated with the Rockefellers, and of course, Stephen Rockefeller, who is the son of Nelson Rockefeller. All of the men deeply involved in the occult, because the common denominator behind this whole movement, first of all, towards environmentalism, and secondly, towards the New World Order, and the One World Government, and the One World Leader, and the New World Religion, is the occult, the common denominator. So that's the Sustainable Development Syllabus. We have a four-tape set on sustainable development. You'll certainly want to get my talk on video, Sustainable Development, the Road to World Government. And then, of course, we have a great new DVD by Michael Kaufman on global warming. We have a four-tape set on global warming. You'll certainly want to get our material on population control. And so if you certainly want to get our video on population control, and, of course, my talk, Nundare College Genocide, which gets into population control, or perhaps a little bit more elaborate talk. It's the same basic talk, but much longer. We did this for the Prophecy Club. It's entitled Planned Population Reduction. They have already killed hundreds of millions of people. They intend to kill hundreds of millions more. If you'd like to document this, of course, the National Security Study Memorandum 200, NSSM, formerly Secret Government Document, available on the Internet or available in printed form from Radio Liberty, the text of Dr. MacArthur's testimony before the House Appropriations Committee in 1969 for asking for $10 million to create a new disease that will be a wonderful form of mass killing. Those are his words, not mine. And give us a call. Get the material. Understand. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And we need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, this hour, the views of Barry Shamish. And Barry is an Israeli investigative reporter, who, of course, has spent a great deal of time trying to expose corruption in Israel. He was the person who wrote about the assassination of Rabin, and, of course, the fact that the story that was told to the Israeli people was not true, that actually this was a hit, was arranged by people in key positions in government, and Rabin was not shot from behind, as we were been told, but he was primarily shot from in front by an assassin who was associated with the government. And, of course, Barry eventually has convinced half of the Israeli people that that really is true. And he's been on the front lines of trying to expose the corruption in the Israeli government for a long period of time. And we have a number of excellent interviews with Barry, and you can get many of these on his website as well. But we're going to be starting a series of talks on an entirely different subject, which Barry has never discussed with me before. I think primarily because he was afraid I would think he had just really gone off the deep side. But, of course, his talks on the return of the giants, and, of course, he's written a book on this some time ago when he was investigating the UFO phenomenon that occurred in Israel back in the early 1990s. And, of course, I actually think that's fascinating because I tend to agree with him. I believe there is a supernatural element to everything going on in the world today. So we've had a previous discussion, chapter one of the book, The Return of the Giants, and today we're going to get into chapter two of Return of the Giants. And so pick up the story there, Barry.
Oh, Dr. Stan, I don't want to disappoint you. I prepared tonight's show based on the fact that I'm in Denver doing a lecture tomorrow.
All right, that's fine. We can do Return of the Giants sometime later.
Well, I will add one thing that's very important. Someone I know and someone you would indirectly know started talking to me for the first time about her experiences, and she sent me an email picture of where her skin was pierced. By whatever pierces the skin, okay, I don't want to say the word alien if I'm not sure they're alien. Tonight, by the way, Larry King on CNN interviewed people that I knew and I was quite friendly with, Jesse Martell. He was a witness to Roswell and Stanton Friedman. These are all UFO experts, and Larry King certainly believes that this is a real subject. This show was remarkable, really remarkable. But I'm giving my first speech in about a year in Denver tomorrow morning, and what I did was I was going to give you some of the highlights of the speech.
All right, that's fine, Barry. We'll get the Return of the Giants some other time.
Won't go away. And I've got new information, and if this young lady agrees to allow me to send you the picture of where she was, honest to goodness, her skin has got something implanted underneath her skin, and she sent me a picture of her skin, and this is a woman, by the way, she's a very Christian woman.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. All right, Barry, go ahead and pick up the story.
All I can say is because of our show, someone started speaking to me very seriously they told me that everything we said the previous show about the smells, about the pinpricks in her body, everything that we discussed has been happening to her. And I do want to discuss that. But my speech tomorrow is based in large part on our long discussion. I went through the notes that I've been making between us, and this show really, you're quite responsible for my program, my lecture tomorrow morning, as you will be for my lecture in New York the week after. So does that give me the right to go on?
Sure, you go right ahead. I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say, because I'm sure you'll bring us up to some up to date on some of the things that are happening in the Near East and Middle East, which of course are deeply concerning to me as well. So you go right ahead, and we'll get back to the Return of the Giants later.
I look forward to that. Now look, I'm in Denver tomorrow at 10 in the morning. It's called Beit Messiah. The address is 8333. 8 3 3s, Acoma Way, Acoma Way. That is one block off 125. That's the announcement. This is my first speech in almost a year in America, because I was blocked from America. Now, and I'm doing it with this awful, awful cold that's been affecting our shows, by the way. I've been coughing and wheezing the last couple of shows. And I'm going to hope, oh my goodness, that I overcome this tomorrow morning. But I'm going to give the speech. It's called the Stopping the New Israeli Holocaust.
All right.
Now, it's going to begin with the missile war. This week, Syria just outright said it. When this war begins, Tel Aviv is going to be bombarded with thousands of missiles. They're going to try and knock out the Israeli defense system, communications, and they're going to do it if you bomb a little country like Israel with thousands of missiles. Israel can't bomb back the same way. We've discussed this missile war on five fronts. We've got Gaza. We've got Jordan helping the PLO, whatever remains of them. We've got the Saudi Arabians cutting a deal with Syria. They've got two giant air bases targeted. And we got our so-called peace partners, the Egyptians. Well, we're surrounded. Israel is surrounded. Jerusalem is going to become Saigon. And people recall Saigon, the capital of South Vietnam. Recall the helicopters.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
Right.
All right. Well, this is Dr. Stan. And of course, our guest is Barry Shamish. And we've changed some plans. We're not going to talk about the Return of the Giants tonight. They're going to have to wait until another time. Barry's giving a talk in Denver tomorrow at Don Wiedemann's church there. And so he's going to sort of review what he's going to be talking about tomorrow, because he feels so deeply that Israel faces a massive missile attack that can not only knock out Tel Aviv, but can knock out the air bases where Israel's major military force, its air force, is. And when this attack comes, and certainly it's not a matter of if it's going to come, it's only a matter of when it's going to come. And many, many people, and the information I'm getting, the intelligence I'm getting, is that we're looking at perhaps sometime within the next 4 to 6 weeks, this whole war over there is going to break loose. And the average Americans, more concerned about the advent of, the training camps for football and wrapping up, of course, the baseball season, and rather than the implications of a massive attack on Israel. And that what that will mean to every person, not only in Israel, but every person in America. Because if Israel is attacked, America will become involved in that war one way or another. So go ahead, Barry. You pick up the story.
Well, Jerusalem will be Saigon. The helicopters will be, they won't take off because so many people will be holding on to their rudders and not letting them take off. That's what's coming up for Jerusalem. And I'm going to talk about the fact that the Gush Katif pullout destroyed army morale, the religious worthy army. And I've got, by the way, I tried to get my book sent to me in time to get people to buy it. I ordered it from lulu.com, lulu.com, lulu.com. It's called Bye Bye Gaza. That's going to be a lot of my speech tomorrow. It's based on the newest book, and I couldn't get it even to show it off. But neither here nor there, I'll talk about last year's Lebanon War, which I just missed talking about last year. I went to Salt Lake City, and the war erupted just a couple days after I was in Denver. But the fact remains, it was a proxy war for the Council on Foreign Relations. It was fought without infantry. They were going to prove we can attack Iran without infantry because we don't have infantry. They're all tied down in Iraq, and it didn't work. And then we end that war with Condoleezza Rice of the Council on Foreign Relations. I don't even know why I have to say that, but it's true. Has a meeting in Rome where the quartet, the Russians, the EU, the United Nations, they all gather in Rome. And what do they decide? Well, I don't know who decided this, but it's a fact. The Vatican troops took over southern Lebanon, and they're there to this day. The troops from Italy, Spain, France, and southern Germany are the troops separating Israel from Hezbollah. Now, I'm going to make a point I never made on your show, and I just discovered it, and I think it's worthy of being made. We're talking about not Benedict XVI, the current pope. We're talking about who was Benedict XV. Now, folks, this is very important because Benedict XV was inducted as the pope on August 14th of 1914. He was inducted as World War II exploded. It was the same day. 14th of August, 1914, was the same day that World War I exploded. Remember, when a pope chooses his name, now I looked at this name, Benedict, and I thought he was after the Benedictine monasteries, order, the Benedictine order, and I thought it had something to do with the takeover of Mount Zion, which the Vatican deeply wants Israel to give up parts of Mount Zion and eventually the whole thing. And on the Mount Zion is the Benedictine chapel of the Dormition. But no, Benedict XV was the war pope. He was the pope who I don't know if you'll say he started World War I. As you know, it started in Sarajevo, and the Vatican despises the Serbs, and they sent their regime, the Austro-Hungarians, into war. But the point is, the Pope Benedict XVI was preceded by Benedict XIV. He was the first Pope who managed, if he was responsible, for killing 20 million people in one war. And I think that should be recognized. The reason it should be especially recognized is that 6 days after the last Israeli election, Shimon Peres flew to Rome and met the Pope. Now, what was so vital? Well, we know what was so vital, and I'm not going to take your time. I'll just say what I've been saying for the longest time. Peres hates Israel. Peres is trying to bring down Israel. Peres is doing the work of the Vatican. And after the last election, he was in Rome within 6 days. Peres is going to destroy Israel, folks. He really is. He's going to do it for the Vatican with his flunkies over to Iraq. And that's what I'm going to talk about tomorrow.
All right. Now, is Peres the new president of Israel? What is
he
his
sure
name?
Is.
Okay, right. And of course, for our listeners out there, the last president of Israel was simply resigned after charges of raping 6 different women. Now, whether there's truth to it, I don't know. But all I do know is that he was not sent to prison. He made a plea agreement. He'll get his pension. He will live very well. There'll be no punishment. If he did rape 6 women, you have to ask why they let him off. And if they didn't rape, he did not commit the crime, were they simply getting rid of him so they could bring Perez into power to become the president of Israel? So pick up the story there.
Well, you were right about the last sentence. There is... You don't oppose Perez. He'll get even with you. He wants to be president. You have to ask why. And he's not going to be a ceremonial president either. You got to remember, and I'm going to make this point tomorrow as well, that the Bolshevik Zionists, the Sabbatean Zionists, were also very responsible for the Russian Revolution. And during the Russian Revolution, they had a tactic. The tactic was to plant agents provocateur throughout the opponents. In other words, you have people, supposedly your leaders, who are in fact working for the opposite side. That's how the Russian Revolution worked, is that the agent provocateur screwed up the opposition side and allowed the communists to win. And what we've got right now is you've got these agent provocateur who were, by the way, in every camp in Russia. They were in the Tsarist camp, they were in the communist camp, they were in all camps. This is how you maintain control of the whole picture. You've got your agents every which way, and you've got people following these agents. Now, what I'm going to claim, and by the way, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to just stick with the fact that in the religious camp of Israel, while Gush Katif was being evacuated, was about to be evacuated, our government put the Jean Provocateur in the right and religious camps, especially the very top of the Yesha Council, of the council that was supposedly working with the settlers to prevent the Gush Katif settlers from being removed. Well, this year, Benchi Lieberman, at the trial of Avigdor Lieberman, he is the right-wing Israeli, by the way, who now wants Israel to join the EU. But we're going off topic a little bit with that. He admitted that he worked with the police through the Asia Council, of which he was president, to keep the settlers from Gush Katif. He admitted that. Now, he had a partner at the head of the Yesha Council. His name was Pinchas Wallerstein. In January of 2005, actually the meeting was at the end of December, he came up, he had a big gathering with his grand strategy of stopping the evacuation of Gush Katif. His idea was that the youth of Yesha, all the young men, would camp outside the Knesset in the middle of January in Jerusalem when it's below zero, when it snows, and he was going to suck their energy dry. And I was at that meeting. I went with friends hoping against hope that Pinchas Wallerstein maybe would lead the settlers to Gush Katif and block the evacuation, and I saw what he was doing. He was sucking their energy dry. And I screamed at him when I heard this. I screamed at him, "What do you mean camp outside the Knesset? Do you know who your enemy is? Do you know who you're fighting?" This was me screaming that at the meeting. I was just so infuriated. I knew right then and there that he was working for the other side.
In other words, but that's a standard technique, and I think it's so important our listeners understand that. We see this here in America. Asian provocateurs working within the Christian movement, within the conservative movement, pretending to be, against the New World Order and the bad guys, whereas actually, of course, working for them. I've seen this with my friends' ministries. Of course, when their best friend, one of them told me his best friend happened to be an FBI informant. Another one, Michael Rupert. His whole office was infiltrated with government agents to disrupt his very effective ministry. And ministry after ministry has been destroyed, just as the settlers there in Israel were destroyed. So pick up the story there, Barry.
Well, I'm not going to do what this all led to. The other organization that was deeply infiltrated was Koch, and now I'm going to talk tomorrow at my lecture about Itamar Ben-Gvir and his the destruction of the genuine resistance that was growing at the Palms Hotel. He arrives with his groupies. They put a big sign, Mohammed is a pig. The Arabs go crazy. Two of Itamar Ben-Gvir of Koch is removed by the police. His buddies, Shimshon Citrin and Daniel Pinner, are arrested for attempted murder when Arabs attack them with rocks. And 300 young women, followers of Nadia Matar, are arrested and imprisoned. This was all from an agent provocateur. He destroyed the resistance.
That, in fact, it sort of reminds me of recently in Great Britain when the Queen Night Salman Rushdie, who had written the satanic verse, for one and only one purpose, that is to inflame the entire Islamic world. Why would the Queen of England knight a man who's got a fatwa on him, who's antagonized the Muslim world, and however you feel about the Muslim religion? I mean, it's like saying Muhammad is a pig. Well, of course, knighting, Salman Rushdie was exactly the same thing, designed to do one thing: inflame the Islamic world.
Well, she also knighted Rudy Giuliani immediately after 9/11, and people have forgotten that. and it should be forgotten, because Giuliani was a part of it. As soon as she knighted Giuliani, I knew right then and there, this guy was a part of 9/11. Just based on that. But, of course, you're right. But I'll bore your audience with what I'm going to tell them. Tomorrow I tend to be quite dynamic if I can get over this cold, which is just killing me now, several days. Nonetheless, I'm going to include myself, and why shouldn't I? Why shouldn't I? I snuck into Gush Katif when everyone else was being thrown out and nobody was going there. And I went to Neve Dekalin, which was the biggest community in Gush Katif. What was it? 3-4 days before the evacuation. And I was shocked by what I saw. There was no barricades, there was no campground for their supporters, nothing. But they asked me what we could expect. And I answered something so accurately. I said, folks, based on the evacuation of Hebron by Netanyahu, you can expect a Jew will massacre Arabs. I said, "When this is a trick that bad guys use to make sure there's no public sympathy for what they're about to do to you. They're about to do something so awful to you, and you're not protecting yourself, and you're going to lose everything." I told them this. I said, "You are about to lose everything, but there is going to be some Jew who is going to shoot up Arabs." And in the town of Shvaram, 2 days before the evacuation, one Aaron Zada just shoots up the town. I think he kills 4 Arabs. Now, he was a Sefer, supposedly. I did the research on this one. Aaron Zada was far from a Sefer. He was a very secular Jew from Rishon LeZion, who 3 weeks before had left the army.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here with Barry. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry was talking about the forced evacuation of Gush Katif, of Gaza, and of course it was very obvious to him that the people who were supposedly leading the resistance to the forced evacuation were actually government agents, agent provocateurs. And so Barry had gone down to look around. He realized that this whole thing was a setup. It was, and he had made the prediction, well, a Jew is going to end up killing the Arabs to discredit you. I mean, this is a standard technique. If you want to turn the people against the good guys, you have somebody who's supposedly working with the good guys, and he commits some terrible atrocity, and then any sympathy that would be associated with the people who are being forcibly removed from their homes there in Gaza would be lost. The public would champion the government, would support the forced evacuation, forcing these people to leave their homes where they'd lived, some for 40 or more years, and certainly one of the most productive areas in all of Israel as far as agriculture and fruit and other things were concerned, the greenhouses, with forcing them to give up everything they owned and simply leave that region. And so what happened then, Barry?
Well, he did what I said, and I am sure there were about 100 people at my meeting. They were nice people, and they bought books, and they were decent. It broke my heart to look at them in their eyes. I mean, I can't begin to tell you. I tried to warn them, and it wasn't a nice warning, and I said, folks, I told them, Chevra, folks, you can defeat the New World Order. I said, you're being given a challenge, but you're not ready for the challenge. You're not protecting yourself. I said, why is the army being allowed into Gush Katif? Stop them. And I'm sorry, but they were such cowards. And I hate to say it, but they were. They didn't protect themselves. But I'm sure when Zadas killed the Arabs, those 100 people told everyone in Gush Katif that I was right, that there was a massacre of Arabs by a Jew. Now let me tell you about this Jew.
Okay,
I'm
go ahead.
I'm sorry I do that. I've had this cold for 2 days. Now we get back to the Jew. All right. Zada was from Rishon LeZion. One day he just quit the army. He was a young soldier. One day he just doesn't show up for the army.
And now, of course, when you're in the army, that's not the way that it works. I mean, if you don't show up, you're a deserter.
Well, sure, you're AWOL. But he wasn't AWOL. He was being set up to commit a massacre. And the parents, I'll talk about this as well. Where are the parents? Why aren't the parents seeing through this? Where is the protection of the family? Well, it's been destroyed in Israel, just destroyed. Now, Aaron Zada did a very strange thing. He moved to Kfar Tapuch, to the home of one Mike Kuzovsky. Now, this is Kach again. He moved into the arms of Kach.
Now, can you explain to our listeners what Kach is?
Kach was, look, when I met, it was the Jewish Defense League of Israel. It was, founded by Rabbi Meir Kahana. But as I told you on this show, and again what I'm going to repeat tomorrow, I met Binyamin Kahana in July of 1995. And he told me why he formed Kahana Chai, a new organization, Kahana Lives. He said, because of the Kach, I couldn't tell the members from the agents.
In other words, basically his organization was infiltrated, had been neutralized, and after he was brutally gunned down in New York, his organization became simply an extension of the other side. Would that be right?
Oh, yes. Now, the people who have really, really destroyed Kach, of course, are Itamar Ben-Gvir, and you've got to find out about this Baruch Marzel, who keeps a distance from the worst of the atrocities, but I have a feeling he's an agent, too. I've never proven it, though. I've had people say that they know he is because of this and that, but Itamar Ben-Gvir is an agent, and he destroyed Gush Katif. He destroyed the resistance, and on our show we've discussed this. Tomorrow's lecture, I'm going to explain it in detail. But back to Zada. Zada ends up at Kfar Tapuch. That is Binyamin Kahana's, his town. They were all followers of Kahana Chai. Now, this town has a new project. And here's where we get back to Pinchas Wallerstein. It is run by one Mike Kuzovsky, an American who I have heard was deeply involved with NAMLA. I've heard this for 15 years.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Barry Samish, and he's talking about, really, of course, what had happened, the betrayal of the settlers there in Gaza, and how simply this whole scheme was worked out to discredit the settlers, because one man who was not a settler, who was not a religious Jew at all, and of course the settlers were predominantly religious Jews, this was not a religious Jew, he goes down and he commits this terrible atrocity of killing a lot of innocent Arabs, and he turns public opinion against the settlers. This is a standard technique, Sydney, but you go ahead and pick up the story there.
Well, I'm going to make the point, and I'm going to be risky, but I got this information from people I trusted, and I'm going to live with it. It's Mike Kozofsky, who is destroying. After Pinchas Wallerstein announced that the settlers would engage in passive resistance, he opened a petition to support Wallerstein, and that's why I went to Wallerstein's meeting. Pinchas Wallerstein of the Yesha Council was going to actually, well, break the law to save Gush Katif, we thought. Then I went to this meeting where he's going to make the youth of Yesha sleep in tents outside the Knesset in the middle of January. In Jerusalem is a mighty cold place in January. And I knew right then and there he was not trying to stop the evacuation of Gush Katif. He was trying to suck dry the energy of these youths who would have put their life on the line trying to protect Gush Katif, because when the Gush Katif went, their lives went too. It was a matter of time. Nonetheless, back to Mike Kozofsky, tried to book, and Aaron Zada, the massacre, he massacred the Arabs in a town called Shfaram, near Haifa. Now, what's he doing in the hands of Mike Kozofsky? And why, how do you make someone a traitor? And this is a major story that people don't understand. And I certainly learned a lot about it through Yigal Amir. There are young men who have got unusual sexual, proclivities. In the case of Mike Kozofsky, he was apparently a pedophile of young boys. And I heard this 15 years ago from New York, saying, so what's happened to Mike?
Hold that thought. I'll be back here in just a moment with Barry Samish. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Barry is talking about one of these gentlemen who's certainly part of this whole opposition group, who's at least allegedly is a pedophile. Is there any actual proof of that, Barry?
I have people who wrote me, that's all. Okay? But I don't care. I'm not living in Israel anymore. So I don't care. I had that proof sent to me 15 years ago. I know this, that he's working for the Shabak, and everyone close to him knows it already. They know it. Look, Kozofsky was in Kfar Tapuach, and Aaron Zada was under his tutelage. Also there was someone named Avigdor Eskin. We'll do another show on him as well. All of these people were working for the government, pretending they were radical right-wingers. And in fact, they are radical right-wingers. The government chose people who were known to be radical right-wingers. They get in trouble with the law. They don't want to be humiliated. And they certainly don't want to go to prison for pedophilia. You don't live long in prison for a crime like that. So Mike Kozofsky is certainly guilty of something. He was not a natural traitor. But we know this about Zada. After Kfar Tapuach, where he runs from his parents, by the way, say something happened to him overnight. They no longer recognize their son. His personality had changed. I got all of these in my book, Bye Bye Gaza. People go to lulu.com, write my name, Chamish, where it says search, get Bye Bye Gaza, and learn about these people. You do not become an agent provocateur unless you've got something wrong with you. You're betraying people that you're befriending. It's a dirty, filthy business. And if that's not understood, you can't understand where these people come from. This is what I learned when I was researching the Rabin assassination, that Yigal Amir, apparently, from reports I got from a policeman and from a lawyer, that he was, in fact, a pedophile. And, by the way, that's the only explanation I've got, because he never betrayed friends all through high school. He was not a betrayer of people that he liked. He was not a betrayer of anyone. So the Shabaks are using young men who are in big trouble, and they're putting them in bigger trouble, and they think that they can finesse their way out of this and always be loyal right-wingers, because that's what they really are. And people don't have to know that they're working for the government because they have no choice. That's this Mike Kozlowski. Aaron Zada, the day before he attacked Shparam, took a dry run. He took a bus from Haifa to Shparam, arrived in the town, and he fell asleep. He was actually asleep, a half an hour bus ride? He was asleep when he arrived in Shparam, and people reported that he was a druggie. There was a druggie on our bus. The next day he came back on the same bus, and he gets to Shparam and starts shooting up the place. Now, the Israeli police, managed to apprehend him and hold him, and then suddenly they got an order to hand him over to the Arabs, and they killed him. That has never been properly explained, why, if he was in their custody, they would hand him over to the Arabs.
It doesn't really make sense, does it? Because they would know that the Arabs would kill him, but maybe that's a good way of silencing him.
You betcha. Now, that happened with Goldstein, and this is probably not the best show to bring up the Hebron massacre of February of 1994, but inside the mosque, there were rods, and there was a meat cleaver, maybe more. Inside the mosque, there was all the weapons necessary to kill Baruch Goldstein and chop him into 1,000 pieces.
Well, for our listeners out there, what happened was that about three or four Israelis went into this mosque.
Three
of them, and they they start shooting up the place. And
no, they shot six blank bullets. The bullets were found by the police the next morning. They threw two stun grenades, and then they ran out of the mosque and locked Goldstein in. What can you say? They locked him in to die.
Goldstein was
banging on the door, begging people to let him out.
In other words, he's locked in there with the Arabs, and they simply chop him into little pieces.
Yes, and in the absolute panic, there were 600 Arabs inside that tiny space. 20 people, all of them old, were trampled to death. Another 20 people were shot by Israeli soldiers in the opening when they tried to get out of the mosque. Israeli soldiers shot them up. Goldstein shot nobody.
All right, fine.
Okay, it's the same thing with Zada. Zada was drugged one day. The next day the police arrest him and hold him. And then somehow some order comes to hand him over to the Arabs.
But this is after he's actually killed some Arabs, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, this is what I told the people of Gush Katif. I said, just in case the public is a little upset about their army turning into the Gestapo and throwing you out of your homes, they're going to have this massacre where people will think you deserve it. They've already done this to you, I told them. This Itamar Ben-Gvir did it, the world television covered his Mohammed is a pig message. By the way, I'll talk to you later, possibly. This was not the same first time they used that. Kach woman victim, Tatiana Suskin, handed out leaflets showing Mohammed as a pig in Hebron. She got 2.5 years in prison. They get young people and they victimize them. They're not naturally right-wing. They are victimized. In the case of Zada, I do not know what made him so weak, but I do know that he went to Mike Krzyzewski at Kwartepuch, because Kwartepuch, 2 days after the massacre, threw Krzyzewski out. They ordered him to leave, and we never got an explanation for that either. They ordered him out of their town. 2 days after Zada shot up that the town of Spayim, Kwartepuch got rid of Mike Krzyzewski. Now, these are things maybe I should have stressed on the show previously, but I went over the notes and tried to put in perspective for tomorrow's speech. What you've got to understand, now, here is the big one, and one that I should have really stressed again with you. 2 days before the evacuation, while Zada had just shut up Spiram, there was a rally in Jerusalem. 300,000 people showed up to pray at the Western Wall for to stop the evacuation of Gush Katif. One rabbi, Yitzchak Mordechai Eliezer. Now get this, because he actually did this. He rented a hotel with massive amounts of food, $50,000 worth, is the way I heard it, as a celebration because God was going to come with a miracle and save Gush Katif. 300,000 people gathered at the Kotel, at the Western Wall, 2 days before the evacuation of Gush Katif, and prayed for the peace, well, of Gush Katif and Jerusalem.
Did anybody talk about the fact that the Israeli army and the Israeli government were going to betray their own people?
Well, that goes without saying. I mean, you know, really, does the Pope barf in the woods, you know, when you say that? Yes, that's what happened. Now, my point, though, is a very different point. My point is this. If those 300,000 Jews had not wasted their time at the Western Wall and had all descended on Gush Katif, they would have saved the place. No army, the Israeli army, can take on 300,000 determined Jews. They would have stopped the evacuation. And by the way, the army would not have shut them down. There would have been a limit to, when you've got 300,000 people all walking from anywhere and everywhere through farmers' fields, through towns, taking boats. It doesn't matter how it was done. If you had those 300,000 people going to Gush Katif and protecting the place, Gush Katif would not have fallen. But they were in Jerusalem praying. And honest to goodness, God does not want Jews or anybody to just pray. The expression in Hebrew is Bezrat Hashem, with the help of God. You don't expect them to do everything. Well, I said to myself, and I wrote this down, and I sent it all over the world, and at least 3,000 people who get my email, plus all kinds of websites, just read that they were too selfish to save Gush Katif. They wouldn't get hurt. Look, there were 300,000 people who were in Jerusalem. They should have been in Gush Katif, but they were too cowardly, too self-centered, and too selfish to actually save Gush Katif. When you pray at the Western Wall, you don't get hurt. And there is a big, big problem. The prayers didn't help, obviously. Gush Katif was evacuated. But if I had an answer, if I was God, well, I'm not. Okay, I mean, this is a very hypothetical if. I would have looked down and said, they're not helping me. They're sending me prayers when they should be in Gush Katif, protecting my farmers. Let Gush Katif fall. This is not the people I want to protect. Again, very hypothetically, this is me imagining what God would be saying when he saw all the people praying at the Western Wall instead of fighting Gush Katif. I would have said, to hell with them all. These are cowards. I want nothing to do with them. And I think, you know what? If that's if there's a God and he was looking down, I'll bet you anything he thought that.
Well, but don't you think, of course, that the people who were leading the resistance actually wanted to neutralize the people and keep them there by the Wailing Wall rather than doing anything that would really be effective? In other words,
That's a very good point.
Get them a busy work, you know, get them feeling like they're accomplishing something, but they're really not.
That's a very, very good point, and one I had never thought of, as a matter of fact, that maybe this was, in fact, you know, the rabbis, the government hired rabbis to make the settlers, well, idiots. I mean, really, they were handing out orange rags. Now, about orange becoming the symbol of Gush Katif, that could not have come from Gush Katif. Gush Katif, there's nothing orange about Gush Katif. Orange was the color of the Ukrainian resistance that brought down the Ukrainian government a few months before Gush Katif fell down, and they just copied this hokey, phony symbol from the Ukraine and decided it was their own. It was dreadful. But you're right about something. The rabbis, the worst of them was Shlomo Aviner, because he really had a lot of kids who thought that he was some sort of prophet. And I knew what he was doing. And by the way, I was invited to Gush Katif. This is also a story of interest. I was invited to Gush Katif by the yeshiva in Neve Dekalim. And I went there early, and I talked to three rabbis. Two were just young kids. Really, they were called rabbis, I think, out of respect. But the third was slightly older, and I think he was an actual rabbi, a teacher. And they told me the whole story of Shlomo Aviner and how he's advising Jewish women. Look, let's just say that rabbis have a dirty side to their business. It's the sexual side. And he was giving advice based on women's periods and stuff like that, that would have got them pregnant. And in fact, the babies would have been illegitimate because they were conceived during a woman's period. And they were telling me all this stuff that eventually, by the way, there was a boycott put on Rabbi Shlomo Aviner by numerous other rabbis when this stuff got out, that he was advising women to have children who would have been illegitimate. Nonetheless, he was the one telling the settler kids to hug the soldiers. You heard me? Hug them. That was Shlomo Aviner. And, well, you're right. He was the resistance. I don't know if he got the people to the Western Wall, though. That I think, was bigger than the government-controlled rabbis. Nonetheless, these people, why weren't they in Gush Katif? I say that over. They have a mind. They don't have to be led like lemmings over a cliff. No one's forcing that on them. Well, that's what happened. Like little lemmings, they were brought to the Western Wall. Within 48 hours, Gush Katif was evacuated.
But of course, Barry, you do not get 300,000 people out without organization, without a great deal of money, without a great deal of communication. When you can get 300,000 or 500,000 people out, somebody's done a lot of work to do it.
Oh, you could be sure of that. But there was also a great emotional. The Jews were worried that Gush Katif would fall, but what good is it going to Jerusalem and praying? They believed their prayers would stop it. And look, I told them what I just told you. Be'ezrat Hashem, with God's help. You don't let God do the whole thing by himself. God doesn't want that.
Okay, fine. Well, go right ahead with the story. We're running out of time here.
Oh, we are?
Right.
Well, look, let me give my website and the fact that I'm in Denver tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, 8333 Acoma Way. That's one block west of I-25. I will be speaking at Beit Messiah. There are people I would love to meet. Come and meet me. My website, just go to BarryChamish.com or BarryChamish.net. It'll get you to the website. My books, including Bye Bye Gazler, are at LULU.com, Lulu.com. Now, if we have a little more time, I'll add a little more stuff.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment, and Barry will have 3 minutes to wrap up this evening's program. And then, where are you going to be in New York City?
Oh, New York City. I'm going to... I have about 5 different dates in New York City. I'll give a phone number when we come back.
All right, very good. Well, anyway, I get Barry as much coverage as you can. A fascinating source of information, and of course, you'll learn a great deal about what's really going on over there listening to his stories. All right, Barry, we've got just 3 minutes.
All right, in New York City, I'm going to be on Sunday, the 22nd of July at 4 p.m. At the Seaview Jewish Center. The number there is 718-251-1900, 718-251-1900. And believe it or not, people, I am speaking to the alternative 9/11 people of New York. And if you want to see me, go to the former site of 9/11 and then go talking afterwards. Phone Amir Street, 718-300-0091. 718-300-099. If you live, all right, 091. And if you live in the five cities, you phone Shlomo Wallfish at 516-371-AISH. 516-371-AISH. Now that's New York. Now next time we talk, I have to talk to you about Orlando, because in Orlando I witnessed a conference. John Hagee was the big-time pastor. I was thrown out of this conference only time in my life. The person who threw me out was a Shabak agent. His name was Asher Newman. I want to talk to you about a real dangerous phenomena, and that is Christians leading Israel to attack Iran, because that's what this conference was about. And let me tell you something. Iran will attack back, and they know it. And they want an end of it in Israel in a nuclear assault. They think their Messiah is going to return with half the Jews of the world now murdered. I would like to talk about that phenomenon next time around.
All right, that's fine. I share your concern about it. Certainly, I think that these people may be well-motivated, but I think we're talking about organized insanity. I don't think the people of America want an attack on Iran. I don't think the people of Iran want to go to war with the United States. And yet everything we read and everything we're getting in the way of intelligence from that area is that it's only a matter of time before we have an war. We are at war with Iran, and it'll have a devastating effect for Israel. Barry, we're out of time. God bless you.
See you next time. I enjoyed it.
I always enjoy it. Thanks so very much.
Bye, all.
Bye-bye. Well, of course, that was Barry Shamish, and it's amazing how similar our views are. We come from entirely different perspectives, but we're both very concerned about the fate of Israel as we see the war clouds growing ever darker over that part of the world. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we depend upon you for your help to fund the shortwave and the Internet and the satellite and the radio stations. But altogether, we have pretty close to about 60 outlets every single week, and of course, it gives us an opportunity to reach people all across America, indeed, all across the world. And with your help, we'll do it as long as God gives us the breath to do it. And so if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. that will understand the backgrounds of all of the wars of the last century, why you need to get my talk on Iraq, the Untold Story, because, of course, it deals with everybody starting with the Spanish-American War, the Filipino-American War, which most Americans have never heard of, and that, of course, taking you into the Boer War, 1899, World War I, which was contrived to bring about the United Nations, World War II, which was contrived to bring about the United Nations, World War I was to bring about the League of Nations, and then World War III, the war that's coming to bring about the end of America and the establishment of a world government. Could this be planned? Are these things happening simply by accident, or is there a master plan? And I think as you get the story of all of these wars and realize that most of what you've been told just is not true. It's an excellent talk, available either in DVD or in video, but the important thing is the syllabus that has so much documentation in it, and you want to have it at your fingertips, and you're not going to be able to get it elsewhere. And so that's Iraq, the Untold Story. Then to put it into its proper spiritual perspective, you need my talk, Brotherhood of Darkness, and the book that goes with it. My talk, Forbidden Secret. It exposes the secret that has been passed down for 5,000 years. And it's only recently is it being popularized here in Americanism as something called The Secret, but it is really Rosicrucianism. And if you were to watch the DVD that goes with the secret, and you were to freeze frames, you'd see there the word Rosicru, repeatedly there, but you have to, they do it subliminal stimulation. You don't actually see it unless you freeze the frames. So understand that it is the secret of the ancient mystery religions, being brought right down to today in the Forbidden Secret video. There's a syllabus that goes with it that will give you President Bush's inaugural speeches and other speeches where he talks about the angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs his storm. The angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm. Who's the angel? What's he talking about? Well, you'll know when you see the DVD, and then, of course, you'll want to see Chris Pinto's The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. You'll want to see Chris Pinto's, and these are very professionally done documentaries, his story of Riddles in Stone, The Secret Destiny of America. And then, of course, you'll want to get our four tape sets on the supernatural. You'll want to get our a book written by Malachi Martin, The Hostage to the Devil. Hostage to the Devil. And then the four tape set on the wisdom of Malachi Martin. Get the two of them together. We call it the Malachi Martin Special. If you'd like more information, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, remember our website, RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen to our programs on the Internet. You can get the shortwave frequencies, satellite frequencies. Pray for America. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.